Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Hello, folks, and welcome to the first edition of Farming Aotearoa for 2025. Once again, agricultural journalist Peter Burke joins me in studio today to bring us up to date on what's been happening in the past month. Hello, Pete.
G'day. How are you?
Well, very well, thanks. And happy birthday to you, by the way.
Oh, God, I mean, this is getting embarrassing now. There's a certain point which you don't want to know about their ages, actually.
I haven't asked your age, and I won't.
That's all right. I don't care. It's what it is. It's surprisingly, you know, the holiday period you'd think would be a quiet time, but actually it hasn't been. And while I've in theory been on holiday, which I haven't been, I've been busy trying to sort out a house to sell. However, a lot's been going on, and right up until Christmas there was a flurry of activity, and right through the holiday period there has been a lot of things happening. So the first one I'm going to touch on today is a so-called shake-up of the science system in New Zealand, which came out a week or so ago, where an announcement was made that they're going to merge some of the Crown Research Institutes into one organisation, calling themselves some strange name, but it's called, Public Research Organisations, PROs. You can always rely on the government to come up with a stupid acronym and a stupid decision. So, you know,
it's the
PROs. But they're going to merge one called a bioeconomy, which sounds lovely. It's someone has probably been paid $100,000 to come up with that idea, which any five-year-old could have done, but that's another issue. They're going to merge the Ag Research, Land Care, Plant and Food, and Scion into one. They're the four agri-type CRIs in together. Now, to the best of my knowledge, only Donald Trump thinks big is the big thing, but I'm not so sure that big things are the best. And one of the things that interests me is that while it's been said this should in theory work, and if you look at it on the face of it, four into one, they're all the same thing. Will they work collaboratively? Will they be better? The theory is, yes, they could. That's fine. But the real question is that going to work? Now, I've seen my general observation of businesses that larger organisations are less agile. Mm. They tend to be bureaucratic, no matter whether they're government or they're private enterprise. They move slowly because there are layers and layers of people checking everyone else's corrections, and they end up with, you know, what it's like. The other thing about this is that, and it's raised interestingly by Stephen Joyce, a former minister in the national government, who questioned whether this was simply rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, wasn't really going to prove much. And I have a bit of cynicism about the whole thing. The CRIs, to my mind, weren't working too badly. The problem was in the way that they were funded. There's an outfit called MBE, Ministry for something or other, I don't know what. But they are the ones that helped that determine the funding. And I've worked in that science funding area myself over a number of years. And I wonder whether that outfit should not have been reviewed at the same time as the CRIs were, because there's linked. And just to give you an example of it, that if a scientist, say, wants to get a grant, they have to put a bid in. Now, sometimes that bid may be for $200,000, it may be for $50,000, it may be for $5 million, I don't know. But the amount of work required to do that sometimes is almost disproportionate to the amount of money that they're going for. And in organisations such as the CRIs, and I've worked in one where it occurred, there was a whole department set up to deal with the bidding process to getting money, which seemed to me to be a waste of money and a complete lack. I don't doubt that there should be some way of justifying the money for a project. But it's a point at what level should it be, and what should the level of application be? And my view is that MBE should have been reviewed as part of it. And I haven't been able to get an answer from anyone about why it wasn't, although I heard the other day that they might be reviewing it. I think to do this was a crazy thing. It was like it's like looking at a car and saying the engine looks fine, the car's right, but then we won't review the outside until we've got the engine right. So that's my concern about it. The other question I have on it, and it's not answered in the very, very upbeat type of announcement we got. We got a press release out, which is, well, you know, this is wonderful, and I have to say it's in my business, I've smelt bullshit for years, both on the farm and in the business, and some of this makes me wonder a little bit. The concern I have is not so much the science, but the communication of science. And many years ago, I had the pleasure and privilege of meeting the one New Zealander who was alive at the time, who won the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, Alan MacDiarmid. And he came, I got him to New Zealand to open or to inaugurate the New Zealand Young Scientist of the Year Awards. He said to me, there's no point in doing science unless you communicate it well. And my question is to those who have done this review, is this going to result in better science communication? And I'm not sure it is. Mm. And that's my biggest question. That will the large entities, the time it takes to get them up and running, it's going to be slow-mo to get them up and running. It'll be a legislative process for the next year. So that's people will be wondering about their jobs. They'll be insecure. They'll look around and say, if there's a better job overseas, will I take it? I might do, yes. Why wouldn't I? Because I might not have a job. And I think it means that we're going to have about 2 or 3 years of hiatus in the system. Now, if the government is saying they want quick results in science and in innovation, why put yourself through this?
Why do this?
I don't know. I just can't see the logic of it.
Often what happens is these things happen and then they disband it all again in another 3 years.
You
know what I mean?
I remember once in broadcasting, I remember being restructured so many times, but I ended up in the same office 5 years later. Which was, you know, what happened. But the question is, will this work? People are saying it will, but there's others out there who are raising the question, and I respect Stephen Joyce immensely. And when he starts to say, I don't think so, is this really very good, then I'm probably on Stephen Joyce's side. I wonder whether it's an ideological restructuring rather than a business, because when I asked for some questions from one of the new science minister about it, I got told that, well, they're doing the costings as we go along. Well, my answer would have been, why didn't you do the costings at the start? Because the first thing you would have thought was, we'll work out, is there a cost benefit in this, or is there not? Is this just to please, to look something that looks pretty? Or is it going to be something that's going to work? And I'm not convinced it will work, but then I'm just a mere journalist, so therefore I haven't got a double PhD and I haven't got a knighthood and all those sort of things, so who am I to know anything, except that I think I've got a bit of common sense tucked away in my head. That's where a lot of people that I've spoken to and I've written some critiques about have actually said, you're on the money. Well, I don't know. Why should I know about it? There is a lot of concern around what's there, and I think that there's people saying asking the same questions that I'm asking, is this a good idea or not? Now, the jury is out. I might be completely wrong, and therefore, you know, someone's going to say, well, we'll sue you for your defamatory comments. Well, the answer is, so be it. I don't care. I think I'm right. But then...
Well, you're not being defamatory. You're just giving your opinion.
I'm giving an opinion. And I guess that it may not be a valid one, others, but I think it is a valid one. I think there's questions to be asked. There's no answers forthcoming. We've got another conglomerate. And is it working? And I think some of the smaller government departments are more efficient.
Mm.
They claim combining overheads is a good thing, but then they end up with bureaucracies and layers of it, and I worked in it. Yes, Prime Minister is not a comedy, it's a documentary, we all know that. Gliding On was not a comedy, it was a documentary, for those who can remember that. The public services, you know, yes.
Okay, we'll stop him there before he does get into trouble. Okay, talk to me about Canada while it's still Canada.
Yeah, well Canada is interesting. Canada... You would think, you know, as a member of the Commonwealth and all those sort of wonderful things, and it should be, and it's arguably a free trade organisation, but in fact it's the opposite of that. Canada is in dispute with New Zealand on two fronts at the moment. Firstly, we belong to this CTPPP arrangement, which is a free trading group based around the Pacific. And as part of that, Canada is a signatory to that, and in theory, and as part of that, New Zealand is entitled to send exports to Canada, but Canada has got some strange mechanism of supporting what I call its lifestyle farm dairy farmers. In other words, the average dairy herd in Canada is about 89 cows. Well, we've got the average herd size in New Zealand is about 450. So in my mind, they're lifestyle farmers, but then they won't like that. I don't care. So they've stopped us doing that. But then on top of that, they're also, the way they've gone another step further in terms of international trade, that they've manipulated their system internally so that their farmers get paid a high price for the top price for their milk, but The people who want to process it, like the Fonterras, can buy it for half that price. In other words, they get it cheaply, and then they put it on the international market at the price that they bought it for.
Who's paying for that? The government?
The government is paying it, a subsidy. So what you're getting in Canada is subsidising the dairy farmers, who they see as a powerful voter bloc. And that's not uncommon. We've seen that in Europe as well. It's not, Canada is not the only one, but I'm surprised to see it in Canada, and I'm surprised to see how a small dairy group in a large country is having so much influence on the international side of it. Because what they're doing is, by being in that position, is they're actually driving down the dairy price. So that means that because of Canada's subsidised exports coming on the market, the Kiwi dairy farmers are getting less for their product potentially. And despite going through all sorts of legal channels, and New Zealand has done that and is found to be correct, Canada is ignoring those. The latest move is that New Zealand, Australia and United States dairy companies, organisations, the companies that represent the processors, have gone to their ministers of agriculture, like in New Zealand's case, Todd McClay, and to whoever is the Minister of Agriculture in Trump's government, and said, look, Canada is doing this. It's affecting our exports. It's affecting our own farmers. What are you going to do about it, guys? Now, we know that it's all very diplomatic. You can't say anything terribly nice, except that Trump has obviously may do something. And I know that he's at war with Canada anyway. And Canada politically is in a bit of a crisis anyway with Justin Trudeau at the moment. So how it goes, we don't know how it's going to play out. But what we've got a situation now is that Canada is proving to be a very difficult organised country for New Zealand to deal with, where things people are saying things like, you know, it's just quite, it's a really bad look on Canada's part. They can't really claim to be a fair, free trading nation by what they're doing now. And heaven knows where this will end up, but it seems like diplomacy in many cases doesn't work. We all know that politicians only exist because they want to get re-elected, not because they want to do anything good for the country.
Is this a surprise, though, for Canada? It doesn't seem
like
it
is. It's surprising for me, and it's interesting. I've just been reading a book about Justin Trudeau's father, who was, again, an interesting character, shall we say, very strange, interesting, highly intelligent individual. But it seems that it's just in the end they bow to the loudest noise or to votes that will get them into power. They're interested in power, as I say, doing things for the communities for a lot of governments is a byproduct. It's something you do on the side if you want to do it, maybe. But it's an intriguing one for me to see.
Okay, well that'll be interesting.
Yeah, so we'll see what
update
happens.
Update us on next time.
Yeah, we'll keep that's been going now for 2 years, so yeah. It's not new.
Okay.
All
right, what else have you uncovered?
Well, just before Christmas, the Ministry for Primary Industries put out their what they call their situation outlook for primary industries, a big document.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out every about six months, I think. It's a document which sets out what they're forecasting for the different commodities for the next six period. And in their last report back in June, I remember the Director General of Agriculture, Ray Smith, said that dairy would bounce back. Few people believed him. I actually did. I thought he was right. And, of course, what's it done? It's bounced back. And we've actually now got a very, very solid dairy industry at the moment. Talking up prices for farmers of being over $10 per kilogram of milk solids for the season is very high. So we're seeing a lot of buoyancy now in the dairy industry, despite the fact that it's been an okay season rather than a great season. We're hearing now, for example, that the Waikato is getting dry. That's one of the big dairy regions, obviously. A bit dry down the west coast, actually, which is surprising. Mm. They've almost got to have 100 mils of rain a day to keep going there. But anyway, that's not unfair. But they are still dry down there too. I was talking to one of the farmers there quite recently, and they're having the same thing. But the dairy industry is certainly, it's the mainstay of New Zealand's economy, basically. If you look at it, I think I can pick the figures out, but they're quite high. And I think just to try and see if I can find them on the thing, but they produce something like almost half of our of our exports. They produce what? 24 billion is big. So, you know, that's a lot of money out of about 40 billion total. So people who complain about dairy cows, you won't be able to buy lattes without dairy cows. And it's not because of the milk, it's because of the money we earn for them.
Right.
The other thing that's interesting in it too was we saw beef and lamb moving up. Lamb prices have been very stagnant and low for the last year or so. There was a movement, a little bit of movement up there. It's not great, it's minute, but it's going up. And that's been largely due to the problems in China. And people saying that there's only a 5% growth in China. Well, people that I know are telling me, well, if New Zealand had a 5% growth, we'd be, you know, jumping over the parking meters and landing in Key because it would be so good. But China has not had that. It's low for China, but it's not low for the rest of the countries. And there was some movement there at last. And horticulture is also doing extremely well. It's up to some big numbers in horticulture now coming through. I think about 4 or 5 billion in exports. They're getting close to what sheep and beef are earning, meat and wool are earning now. They're on the rise. However, and we can talk about that a bit later, but it isn't all quite so rosy as it looks like. There was some. You see the numbers, then you've got to look below the numbers. So that's the other interesting thing that I did pick up too in that was about the assets of Māori. Māori assets, the asset base for what they call Māori collectives. Now that means Māori organisations such as trusts and corporations and so forth have risen quite dramatically in the last 10 years. They've gone from 6 million in 2013 6 billion to 19 billion since in over 10 years.
Is this in earnings?
No, this is an asset base. This is what they're worth.
Okay.
They're worth.
Yeah.
So that tells you quite a lot. That's a big jump. That doesn't include those single individual Māori farmers. It just includes the trust, the incorporations. But it's starting to become quite big, and agriculture is a big part of that. You know, and I think sheep and beef is the biggest one. I think they're worth about their asset base is somewhere in the order of $7 or $8 billion. So what we're seeing is the strength now emerging of Māori as an entity, as a producer of primary products, both sheep and beef, dairy, horticulture, and of course they've got forestry and seafood in there as well. But they're big, and I think it's interesting to see just how big Māori are becoming, and to recognise that they are one of the big drivers in the engine room of the economy of New Zealand, which I'm always intrigued about. It's a very, very positive side there. So yeah, that to me was one of the take home messages from that area particularly. Yeah,
fantastic.
So.
Horticulture.
Interesting. Couple of things. Just before Christmas, a delegation of horticultural people, exporters, mainly sort of the trade type people, went to India just to suss out the Indian market. Now, everyone's talking up India as being the market of the future, and it's a big market, sure. But this group went across there just to lip. They saw, as they said it, to sort of. To listen, to learn, to understand what is involved there. And they've come back quite positive. But India's a complex place. And again, it's a bit like Canada in the sense that so many farmers, the rural community has a very, very big sway in the number of votes. Therefore, the Indian government is not going to do anything to upset farmers or anyone like that at all. That's the last thing they'll do. So New Zealand's got to tread a quite careful pathway. And we've seen various New Zealand ministers make many trips to India. I think Todd McLay was there just before Christmas as well, along with these guys, but not on the same trip. Trying to get build a relationship. It's not about, they're not going to come in there and say, give us a trade deal, mate. We're Kiwis, we like you, we won't beat you at cricket, and let's have a deal. It's a bit more than that. It'll take time. The comments are that if they can get some lift there, that would be great. For example, even we export some apples there at the moment. Well, the tariff rate on those is, I think it's around about 50%, so that's a high tariff rate. It's 30% for kiwi fruit, from memory, too. So they're very high tariffs. The aim is to try and get those down. That would be one of the first things to do. Just try and get. It might be an incremental trade deal. It might not come as one great big signing. It might be a bit of a jigsaw puzzle. As you put it together slowly, things will evolve and they will come through. So that's one of the things that's happening there in the Hawke scene. But the other one, just as if we're coming up to sidetrack for a moment here, but we're not too far away from the anniversary, the second anniversary of Cyclone Gabrielle.
Yeah.
So it's almost 2 years. Wow. It's February. And talking to one of my friends in Orchardus up there the other day is saying the balance sheet destruction is huge. People can see the damage, but they can't see what I can see on my computer.
Right.
And the comments being made at the moment is that to get back, this outfit lost 180,000 trees. They planted 100,000 this last year. They got more to plant this year. They're going to get it back to a point where they think they might be able to put it up for sale or get an equity partner in. And the comment being made is that he may lose, a family that's been in that business for 160 years maybe have to be sold because they simply can't afford to run it.
That's with a awful. Debt.
Or they will have to take in, he said, we might be half Chinese owned 3 or 4 years' time. The impacts of Gabriel are not just the devastation you see on the ground, it's a devastation you see in the balance sheets of these places. And it's the big ones, some of the small ones have just gone completely, they'll never come back.
Mm.
The bigger ones will end up in this sort of way, either having to get equity financing in to keep them alive, or alternatively just sell out and walk away. But, you know, you think of a family business having run for, you know, over one and a half centuries now, done well, and one storm over 3 days has literally wiped them off the thing. So that's just a little bit of sad news in a way. I felt very sad for them about that, actually.
It is very sad news. That is really sad.
It's that's something to remember about Cyclone Gabrielle. And I know that if you look at farms up in Tairāwhiti, there are still people who haven't got proper access to their farms 2 years out. They're still repairing fences. They're still doing work on their farms to get them back to where they were. And that's not being... The media come in like we do, as part of the media, come in, cover the basic things. But now you've got to look at what is still there, and it's a lot of it. And then just look at, yes, the fences might be repaired, but what is the debt sitting like on that farm? And that's really what drives them. Is there the income? What are the prices going to be to bring you back to that? Say, for example, in the case of horticulture, if you put on trees now, you'll get a commercial crop in, say, 5 years' time. But it'll take you another 7 years before they're actually really a valuable investment on the orchard. They'll take time to be there. So it's about a 10-year time frame to get from planting a tree to getting it back to where it was.
And you've got to hope that nothing else happens.
You do. And we're going into those areas of incredible, you know, challenges around climate change.
Yeah.
So that's quite disturbing to my mind as to what's happening. We hear politicians saying, oh, things are improving, we're giving money for this and that. You can't give money to these people that they really need. They need millions, not just a loan. They'll get a loan. They'll be interest-free for 5 years or 3 years or something, but they've got to repay it eventually. And that's, you know, and you've got to look at them and say, is it worth it? We just better get out of it and take our money and run.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway,
gee.
That's it.
Okay.
And that is a lovely story with Andrew Hoggart, the one of the Associate Ministers of Agriculture. And Andrew has been holidaying back on his dairy farm. So while other people have been busy going to Hawaii and other places, Andrew's been... I went up to see him a few weeks back, and here he was, you know, sitting around doing some farm work as opposed to doing his political work. But and I was impressed by the fact that he enjoys just getting out and doing the work and doing the mahi on the job, and he enjoys it. But one of the things he said to me was quite interesting. What he likes most is just to get out on the tractor. He calls it recreational cultivation.
What a great thing.
Oh, it's a great name. But what he said to me was quite beautiful. He said something like, what I love about getting on, when I get home at the weekend. What I like to do is get out on the tractor, because during the week I've been subjected to yelling and squealing from the other side of the house. And just to hear the quiet purring of a diesel engine is music to my ears. And I thought that was rather lovely, that there was, you know, a diesel engine can be the therapy you need after a week in Parliament.
That's calming, yeah.
It really is. So while others might go and have a gin and tonic or a whatever it might be, or a latte down in Lambton Quay,
yeah.
But Andrew's quite happy to sit on a tractor, just hear the diesel engine purring away,
yeah.
And that takes his mind off the yelling and squealing he's had to put up with in Parliament. So I thought that's a positive sign. So maybe we should all go for a tractor ride to calm ourselves down. I don't know.
Oh, I love a good tractor ride. Oh, I've been out in the country. Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Getting some fresh air and just that's real stuff.
Anyway, yeah. That's it.
Peter, thank you so much for that update, and we'll see you next time.
Exactly.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.